people who get it.
Ask the Chief Human Capital Officer Wednesday mornings at 11. Each Wednesday, host Lauren Larson asks agency CHCOs about the challenges and opportunities they face and best practices for managing in this ever-changing environment. CHCOs also speak frankly about their agency's morale, training, and retirement issues. Ask the Chief Human Capital Officer Wednesday mornings at 11 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM is brought to you by Management Concepts, unleashing the potential of individuals, teams, and organizations.
Here's Adrian Gardner, CIO FEMA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Mobility and Government, sponsored by Lockheed Martin.
These mobile devices are enabling us not only to push information to the edge, but also deliver information from the edge. And so I think one of the huge things will be this whole notion of how do we use these mobile platforms to gain more data, more information, to then also drive decision-making with or without the user's knowledge.
To listen to the whole program, made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Technology that enables cars to drive themselves. Routine manned missions to Mars. Lockheed Martin innovations like these are changing ideas of what technology can do. So imagine what the people behind them are doing in IT. Lockheed Martin helps agencies put information to work, engaging employees, identifying threats, and improving service to citizens and soldiers. To see how we're using IT to engineer a better tomorrow, visit us at LockheedMartin.com/IT.
The Boys and Girls Club's highlights with Renthia Ross, VP Geico. Butler Wyatt takes a whole child approach to elementary education. Teachers, administrators, counselors, and support staff work together to meet the intellectual, social, behavioral, and emotional needs of 120 children ages 8 to 18. You can help make sure the Butler Wyatt Clubhouse doors stay open. Donate today at www.aplaceforthekids.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. The Office of Management and Budget's working on new cybersecurity guidelines for contractors after the two big breaches at the Office of Personnel Management. Contractors already have five major expectations for their own cyber programs from the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Larry Allen is president of Allen Federal Business Partners, writes the Week Ahead newsletter every week, and says your company can't get into the cyber game without perfecting and securing its own network first. Larry, we've seen some lessons learned here, too, with some of the big thefts of information from contractors, weapon systems that the Chinese government's stolen, and other stuff, too. And so the government seems to be recognizing, maybe with a little bit of a carrot and a little bit of a stick, that cyber's as big of a problem for you guys as it is for us, but you better get your act together, too.
Well, that's exactly right, Francis. And as a strategic matter, it's a heck of a lot easier for the government to tell contractors to get their act together than it is for them to come together and cohesively get their own systems in order. But the point is a valid one. Regardless, there's so much government data, so many government operations that are run by contractors today. If the government needs to be secure in its systems, then so too do its contractors.
You write in the newsletter this week, your system must have resiliency and be able to recover from any attack. How do you expect the government to start to ask vendors how they're able to do that? How will that be written into the deals?
Well, I think to a certain extent, you referenced the NIST standards up front, Francis, and that's going to be the easy default until the guidance that's expected any day now from OMB comes out. There's going to have to be some certification, and realistically, certification is probably going to be the best way for the government to do it. It's not like they have a lot of inspectors lying around waiting to inspect government contractors' cyber systems. But the biggest two things, I think, are one, competition from other companies who will be willing to point out weaknesses, real or perceived, in their competitors, and just what we have in the rest of government contracting, which are whistleblower complaints.
You also write, these elements apply to subcontractors you may be dealing with as well. And that's, I guess, the only way that makes sense to be able to manage that is a compliance situation, too, because same thing that applies to the vendors applies to the or that applies to the government applies to the vendors too. They don't have people inspectors running around.
They don't, but certainly the government is going to expect you as a prime contractor to make sure that your subs have secure systems and that any data that they're working with is kept secure as well. The government is far less likely to take the "we don't have the capacity" argument from contractors that it would be willing to give itself.
You mentioned that if you've done any business with DOD lately, chances are a new clause requiring cybersecure systems is part of the deal, as are penalties if you fail to comply. That means if they do catch you, you're in big trouble.
Well, I think this is something we're going to see more and more. Look, the government is kind of playing catch-up in terms of cybersecurity, Francis. It really takes a couple of bad incidents similar to the one we already had with OPM before this gets on everybody's radar screen. And the discussions I've had just this week with OMB, for example, it's clearly priority one, but it's priority one right now. So you can expect to have rhetoric coming out and action coming out from the government to try to play catch up with some things that, to frankly, the horse may already be out of the barn door.
Larry Allen's the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. He writes the Week Ahead newsletter. And you have a very active and exciting mailbag, and you have a letter this week from loyal reader T. Swift of Nashville, writing, "I'm a commercial item prime contractor with many subs. What contract clauses do I need to flow down to these companies?" What's flow down mean in the first place?
Well, flow down means that just as a prime contractor is responsible for abiding by certain government regulations, so too are their prime contract, are their subcontractors, whether they're first tier, that is primary subcontractors, or lower in some cases.
And why is that important? Are you seeing people who are not making sure that their subs are complying with the same stuff that they have to, or what's driving your correspondence letter?
Actually, Francis, yeah, the interesting thing is that just like the government, the tendency among prime contractors is to overprescribe the amount of contract clauses that their subcontractors have to comply with. And there's a lot of confusion about what types of contract clauses have to be complied with. Writing specifically this week about commercial item contracts, because T. Swift of Nashville is a big commercial item contractor when she's not singing. So oftentimes you'll find a commercial subcontractor being required to sign up for things that only apply to companies that are selling military supply parts.
What else are people making mistakes about or ignoring because unintentionally or whatever about that?
Well, that's actually a really good question. And the thing is, it's not really just a hit on the prime contractors, because in certain cases, Francis, it's even the government that doesn't fully understand the difference between a commercial and non-commercial contract. There are certain contract clauses that have to be flowed down, that is, prescribed for subcontractors if you're selling commercial items. But there are other contract clauses that have to be given for non-commercial contracts. And the tendency for the government as well is to say, look, we had this contract clause required in our last contract. We're going to make it required now, not understanding that today's contract is really different from the one they did 2 weeks ago.
The other item that you write about is that you see storm clouds brewing at the end of the fiscal year. You write, various proposals, including passing a continuing resolution at sequestration levels, are currently being discussed. Whether or not that happens, it seems certain fiscal 16 will start under some sort of CR if it starts on time. Now, I don't hear anybody saying that they think that there's going to be a shutdown, except folks that don't really have the leverage to be able to drive it in the first place. That being said, the CR scenario does seem to be increasingly likely.
Well, I think it is. And what we're seeing every beginning of fiscal year now, Francis, is a political spectacle. You know, people like the Rose Bowl, people like the Thanksgiving Day Parade. Those are spectacles. Maybe they like the spectacle at the beginning of each fiscal year as well. Because really, this year, there probably isn't any good logistical reason to start the year under a CR. Congress has done so much work on appropriations bills that if there was a real desire to get everything put in place on time, they probably could do that. But there are political points to be gained and possibly political feet to be held to the fire on any one of a number of issues. Today it's Planned Parenthood. Last week it was the debt ceiling. Next week it's likely to be some other issue where people think they could score political points. And you're right about the fact that up to now, the people who are making these threats probably don't have the numbers to drive a shutdown, but they certainly do have enough power to create some uncertainty, to make planning very difficult for both the government and its contractors as they try to get into the next fiscal year. And really, this is becoming an annual event, and maybe we ought to memorialize it with its own parade.
Well, we ought to memorialize it by burying it, if at all possible, but that's just my personal opinion. You write, advice-wise, close fiscal 15 strong and watch closely for what develops or not after that. Is it too late, Larry, for somebody to lay out a strategy to close 15 strong enough that they don't have to worry if the business is slow to flow for the first month or 6 weeks or even 2 months of fiscal 16?
I don't think it's too late, Francis, so long as you don't set your sights too high. If you're going into the last couple of months of the fiscal year, you have to realize that those big contracts, the ones where you can make or break your year in one deal, or have probably gone by the wayside, either formally or for practical purposes. But there's still plenty of smaller and medium-sized business that's going to be done between now and September 30th, where you can have a very good year overall. There's a lot to be said for smaller pieces of the pie that add up to one big chunk when you're done.
I appreciate having you on as always, and I always read the Week Ahead newsletter, my friend.
All right, Francis, have a good week.
Thanks for being on. Larry Allen's the president of Allen.